We're going to think about boxes a little bit today. We've got the poet and artist Nikki Melville to discuss his new exhibition, Dole, which takes place in an old unemployment office. But first, we want to share a piece from theater maker Andy Field. Originally, you would have listened to this in a phone box. So perhaps for the next 6 minutes or so, go and pretend to be a very slow Superman, or just imagine yourself in a confined space.
Hello, everybody.
It's the multicolored cultural laser. We travel the world for the boys and the girls. Casting pods of wonder and amazement. Multicolored cultural laser.
This is an important report. Please repeat everything as you hear it. This is an important report. Please repeat everything as you hear it. This is an important report. Please repeat everything as you hear it. Stop. 5, 4, 3, 2. One. I have for you some information. Listen carefully and repeat everything that you hear. I will say this only one time. I will not repeat myself. You will not interrupt. I will not take questions at the end. When I say stop, it is over and you may hang up. The following is based on a true story. The report begins. The scientists came to the city from somewhere far away, though they were not forthcoming about where exactly. They said they had been sent to examine the city, to explain it. This is not just for our benefit, they said. It is for everyone. They set about their task with a commendable vigour. They could be seen everywhere. They always wore simple white coats and gentle but serious expressions, like the extras in an advert for designer spectacles. Sometimes they were on their own, and sometimes they came in pairs. One would speak whilst the other nodded and made notes. You saw them on street corners. They were stood almost unnoticed at high windows. They were in the back seat of passing cars. They were standing in the corners of bars and clubs and restaurants. They stood in phone boxes, holding the phone in one hand and peering through the dirty glass. At dusk, they stood somewhere high up and gazed down upon the city. People grew used to them. They became part of the scenery. It came as quite a shock when one day, many months later, they announced that they had finished. They called a meeting in City Hall. The clamour for tickets was incredible. Huge screens were installed outside and in nearby parks. News vans clustered on the streets outside. People gathered outside electronics stores to watch on the banks of televisions in the window. Old sets were hauled into place by classroom assistants and retirement home nurses. They began plainly and humbly. They thanked people for their cooperation. They apologised for how long things had taken. They hoped they hadn't been a bother. They hoped their work might prove useful. They hoped they would be remembered fondly. A PowerPoint display flickered on behind them and they began. Their method was a simple one. They took everything and divided it into two. Streets where you looked up, and streets where you looked down. Restaurants where you mainly ate, and restaurants where you mainly talked. People not afraid of running in public, and people who were. Animals that, if large enough, would attack you, and those that wouldn't. Parks used in sitcoms, and parks used in police procedurals. Cars trying to look like the future, and cars trying to look like the past. shops where you felt unwelcome, and shops where you felt ignored. Pedestrians who looked left first, and those that looked right. Dogs that seemed to be smiling, and dogs that seemed to be angry. Bus whisperers and bus shouters. Automatic revolving doors and those you had to push. Bars that filtered their tap water, and those that took it straight from the tap. The saved and the damned. Places where the signs were in English and places where they weren't. Car parks underground and car parks on the surface. Music that could theoretically have been performed in the 60s and music that couldn't. Lovers and fighters. Trains with air conditioning and those without. Shops that played the radio and shops that played iPod compilations. Adverts dreaming of the sea and adverts dreaming of the mountains. Cracks that were concealed and those that were displayed. Streets that looked better by day and those that looked better by night. The wrong side of the tracks and the right one. On it went and on, each new category followed by an exhaustive list of everything and everyone in the city and where they fitted. Nothing was ever left out. The presentation took 7 days. They took it in shifts, always with the same measured tone and plenty of bottled water. People drifted in and out. Some left cameras and dictaphones running. People camped in parks. It came to a sudden end. No flourish. They thanked people for their time, placed their laptop back in its case, and left. People took some time to come to terms with what had happened. There were lengthy editorials in the newspapers, and a special season of drama documentaries on television. There were verbatim plays and conspiracy theorists. Some people were offended. Some people pretended to be offended. In the end, however, they decided that all things considered, it was a very fair assessment. Stop.
That was The Scientist by Andy Field. It was read by Ira Brand. The poet Nikki Melville is artist in residence at the Forest Center Plus in Edinburgh, which is housed in an old job center office. Taking inspiration from the building and his own experiences, his new exhibition examines the welfare system using collage, found materials, poetry, and a pretty good sense of humor. Here he is, Nikki Melville.
I'm Nikki Melville. I've got an exhibition starting at Forest Center Plus, open until the 16th of November. It's called Dole, and it's an investigation into the building and the sort of ghosts that have been left by Social Security. So I'll read a poem that's a Tippex version of a job seeker's letter which I received, called "The Law Says You Need to Live On." Joker's lance, you please us, touch us, evil hate fits in and ain't hard. Mr. Evil, aim seekers hang you, have looked at you again, you cannot pay, you need to, we may still edit you to 10 centre, attach with SOP letter. You want explanation? Your job has changed. Get with us, our dress fetter. Help may be, other help, other help. Sing, council ruction, sing, soon sing. You should show them you want more decision. We will give an explanation, dress fetter. Tacked on, pens again. The decision can be a new decision. Change the decision against the decision. How? If you want, pal, fill in the form G24. If you please us in 1 month, you can get security. You will be heard by a pen pal. If the decision is wrong, the pen pal can change it. But the pen pal cannot change the law the decision is based on, pay more money than law allows, or hang you on cord. You agree? You agree? Puss staff work to compete through you. Aim seeker's lance to the prop officer. Aim to member, member household bane. If you want to know more about your seeker's lance, dress fetter. Keep getting things free. Keep you in form.
So you'll be able to see like the original letters that you've gotten and then some of the Tippex stuff out in the exhibition, right?
The law says you need to live on. See it there. So that's a question I've asked in one of my pieces for the exhibition. I asked that question in a letter to Ian Duncan Smith. What is the law that says the exact amount of money that you need to live on? How can there be a law about that? And how is such a law enforced?
In terms of how much money you're earning every week. And who says you can live on, what's the government decided now? It's £71.70?
It's £71.70 a week.
And you've got a little budget here of what it costs. Are these your actual living costs? Electricity, bus fare, internet, mobile phone?
Pretty much, yeah. Did a sort of mock menu for the week of kind of a healthy diet for 7 days. Taking into account other government recommendations, such as eating 5 fruit and veg a day, yeah, which can be quite expensive. So I factored that in to my menu to sort of show that it's impossible to live on that amount of money. And that didn't include like lots of other things, bigger items that you need to buy and so on.
And why are you doing it at the Forest Centre Plus?
Maria asked me if I would like to do some kind of residency here. And as I was on the dole, anyway, it was very appealing to me to have a residency in a building that was a job centre and a social security office.
They all have the same look, because like, right, you did a performance in here where you were behind the glass, is that right?
Yeah, glass. They don't have glass down at Leith. I'm not sure about other places. But yeah, they've got sort of bulletproof glass there and these little booths. I think it was probably because it was a bigger centre. It was for like income support and general kind of social security benefits.
So what's your take on this? Has Ian Duncan Smith managed to write back to you yet?
No, he's not replied to me yet, no. I copied in my local MPs, Kenny McCaskill and Sheila Gilmore, who's MP for Labour in the House of the Commons, and they've both replied. They're quite interesting in themselves.
What did you think was interesting about their replies?
Well, there's a mistake in Kenny McCaskill's letter. He says, "I am unsure what I say or do." You know, that sums up politicians, if you ask me. So I think he means to say, "I'm unsure what to say or do, other than to express my full sympathies." So that's a beautiful little typo. And basically, he doesn't really say anything. He just says, "Oh, that's bad." And there's nothing that we can do until these powers can be transferred to the Scottish Parliament.
Right, and the law is the law, and you should vote independence.
Yeah. if I want to get out of this mess.
And what did Sheila say?
She knows
it's a really long letter.
Yeah, it's two-page letter. It's interesting the way she's phrased it. She says, "Thank you for your letter, which reproduced another letter sent to the Secretary of State for Work and Pensions, Ian Duncan Smith." So straight away she's kind of saying, "You've sent me this letter which was not for me." And then she says, "You explain that you generally work more hours than the law than allows you to receive job seekers allowance. You note that. You ask what law this relates to. You argue. You note that this may be blah blah." She keeps saying "you" all the time. Yeah. So it's kind of putting it on to me. It's like almost like an imperative. She's putting all the different arguments back to me at all times. There's nothing there that she can ever get taken to task about.
Yeah, she's not saying anything. It's all about what you've said. Yeah. And this phrase, "the amount the law says you need to live on."
And then she does start to say things like, that's a bit misleading and unnecessary, and it should just be a basic line saying that's what the rate of job seekers allowance is.
What would you say your relationship is with the Dole, with job seekers and these kind of things? Like, is it something that like helps you as a artist to live? Is it something that just helps you live and take care of your family and these kind of things?
They don't help me as much as other people in the way that I don't, because I work part-time, I don't often get any money from them at all. Like, I've had £53 this year.
It's not much.
And that's not much. But obviously I've earned a wee bit more, but not enough for me to get off housing benefits. So housing benefits, the main benefit that I've received from being on the dole, and that's quite crucial. It's not like I've designed my life in this way. I've only been doing this for a year, but it's just basically because I lost a lot of little jobs I had, basically due to the cuts over the last 5 years, because there's not enough money in adult education. So there's been loads of jobs cut. So I'm kind of stuck just with little jobs here and there and having to sign on. But work, having the residency here, has been a bit like life imitating art or art imitating life. And I said to one of my friends, "Oh, I'm going to the dole." And they said, "What do you mean, going up to the forest?" And I thought, "No, I mean, I'm going to the dole."
Yeah, it's a weird overlap. And I guess I was just wondering, like, yeah, as an artist, how does that affect your work? And has this been like a cathartic experience in terms of working here and being on residence here, and also like getting a chance to like fuck up these letters and Tippex things out and actually get to the, like, sort of the, I don't know, I think what you did with the Tippexing out kind of got to the soul of what they were trying to tell you in this really beautiful way, in a really elegant way. And has that been something that's been cathartic, or has it made you more frustrated or angry or like confused about the way the system and the bureaucracy works?
No, it's not made me confused. It's made me realize how kind of regimented the bureaucracy is. And I've always tried to look at language of institutions in this kind of different way and find out exactly what you said about looking for other readings that shows exactly what they're up to or what they're wanting from you, like junk mail letters and things like that. I've been a lot more interested in what's been going on for quite a long time, mostly since I had children. You know, you get a bit more concerned about the world and stuff. But since the kind of economic crisis kicked in, became a bit more politically focused, I suppose. We'd look at political manifestos as sources of poetry and things like that. So being on the dole with getting these letters all the time, this strange language, makes me want to look into it a bit more and kind of find out what exactly, how the system is working at the moment and that kind of thing.
And there's some other stuff here that you found, like just little bits of objects and things like that. Have you found these around the centre here?
Yeah, they were just, I found these lying about upstairs and downstairs.
So what have we got?
We've got like old calendars that were used by employees to mark off holidays or, you know, things like that. If we walk up here, like a letter sign. That's a letter sign from the canteen that was downstairs. Really nice metal and sort of black letters that was kind of eaten away. And I thought that'd be a great introduction to the exhibition because it signifies rubbish straight away, which is how you're kind of treated being on benefits, not just by staff. Not all the staff are bad, my advisor's very good, but a lot of staff have got an attitude that you're kind of piece of shit before they even speak to you kind of thing, which is really annoying and not necessary.
Where do you think that comes from, that feeling from the staff side? Do you have an idea?
And a lot of it probably comes from top down. And a lot of people are kind of prejudiced anyway to people that are on benefits because there's a lot of stuff in the media about benefits. And there always kind of has been. And now everything's kind of changing because of the new Tory regulations that they're bringing in about looking for work for more hours every day and this kind of thing. Yeah, these are just some pens, and I found a swab of all things as well. But I thought it would look nice in a kind of case. I try to make it look a little sinister. So reception has a swab, and then there's sort of pens and elastic bands, and that's kind of interview room number 1 to 4.
And you're going to have some projections as well?
I'm going to replicate the graffiti that's in the toilet that's been there for years, all different folk on benefits. Signed.
So what were they? I love those graffiti. I haven't seen the graffiti in
that. Oh, lots of mad stuff, like "fuck you dirty wee boot" and all this kind of shit. "He's mine.
He's mine."
Grass and, you know, typical things like that. Some nice stuff as well, but mostly it's pretty brutal. And there's a till receipt over there, which I've fashioned into like a toilet roll. It was downstairs in the canteen as well.
Oh, yeah.
The till, so it's just like cash.
And how long is this up? Is this up till the 16th of November? And then what happens next?
I'm doing kind of other projects as well. It's called the Imperative Commands. It's a project looking at imperatives and assertions that you see in everyday life, such as "here for you" or "every little helps." These kind of assertions that you get in marketing and politics and TV and papers. And I'm going to collate them over 3 years. It's basically my PhD that I just started. So I'm going to make a massive book of all these sayings and condense it into like a 300 odd pages just to sort of see what we're being told by the sort of state institutions over a sort of year period.
So this will be not just, this won't be advertising, this will be stuff that's directly from government bodies or organizations?
Well, all institutions, so that'll be education, the law, the government, I'll be adverts to media, things like the Dole as well, they'll be in there. I've already used some for something I'm doing soon, separate to this Dole project.
That's going to be massive.
Yeah.
When you get that far into these things, when you're really looking for them, do you find yourself buying into it or getting sickened by reading this stuff?
You definitely don't buy into it. It's just why I was interested in it in the first place.
When you see the repetition of like, "hey, do this and you'll be okay. Everybody needs to be happy," or whatever. I did a
keynote speech a couple of years ago, and this was when I first started to think about imperatives. And so I was looking at bank literature and I got like all the bank literature I could get for six banks, and I looked at three of them in detail and took out all the kind of imperatives. And it just makes you sick, what they were saying, what they were still asserting that they were doing and how good they were, and this is after the banking crisis. It's unbelievable, and that made me really kind of angry.
So it's all the kind of like, we're here for you, yeah, a better life ahead. Yeah, this.
Yeah, we're great at helping businesses. It's like, no, you're not. At the time, you know, there was like businesses always in the news, like, oh, small businesses are struggling. So no, I did fuck all.
Yeah, your home is safe with us.
Yeah.
No, it's not. So what do we got here? This is interview room five. So you've got a few of these interviews.
There's five in total. One is an actual interview room itself, which is going to just gonna be like a sinister dark room. But the idea of these pieces came from this flex. It's like a flex from a cable, maybe for a kettle or a plug or something. And it just looked like something that would be used in some kind of torture place, like in Guantanamo Bay or something like that, or Abu Ghraib. So that gave me the idea to have it with the name interview room. So it suggests like a, rather than an interview, it'd be like a interrogation. And this is like 63 bits of paper, A4 sheet landscape, and it's all from the one claim, someone with the surname Scott. And there was 248 bits of paper all in a big pile that I found somewhere. And it's all relating to one person.
Oh, wow, that's amazing.
So I'm putting that up in a couple of blocks and just kind of playing around with it. I've been tipex it, and I've had someone else helping me tipex it too.
Well, it's got evidence received on 2002, so like there's at least 3 or 4 years worth of...
Yeah, but there's no kind of logic to what it is, obviously, because I don't understand the system and all the different terms that they use. But if you just look at it, it's just like, it's no wonder the system's in such a mess.
Now, these are great lines. Are evidence captured on HED applicable? Question mark. Yeah, this is it's a labyrinth. It really goes to show how confusing this whole process is, isn't it?
I mean, these ones here, the 63, they're quite amended with Tippex. There's quite a lot of them changed to say other things. But I'm going to do a smaller block of 5x5, and that's mostly been the only thing that's been taken out, apart from two little things, is the national insurance number. So it's just basically everything will be sort of verbatim, and thus it will show exactly kind of what a mess kind of is.
Mm. It's a really, well, it's a great piece. And what are these here? These are just some old folders from the Dole office, yeah?
Yeah, they're folders that the staff had used to keep clients' files in. So, you know, they'd have their name on the cover there, or different bits of dates and stuff, and inside you can, there's like flaps to keep the files and that kind of thing. But they've got a really nice shape.
Yeah, they do have a really nice shape.
So I wanted to make them into some kind of sculpture thing.
And presumably they're not using them anymore, right? These are quite old.
Yeah, I think you do have a kind of folder down at the Dole, but I think these are more for income support type claims. Yeah, as far as I'm aware, that's what they were for. So I'm not sure if they're still used.
Well, that's the thing, man. It's like these are people's lives. Like, who knows what happened to that guy with the 63, Mr. Scott there, yeah, you know? Like, he could be anywhere.
Well, these ones were from actual files that I found, and the lines that I've taken are mostly from people's actual handwriting. Wow. So it's real kind of comments. So I called this Social Security. I'm 18 years old. I am unemployed and have no means of income. First-time claim, and I have no official proof of identity until I secure other accommodation or employment. I was in jail until then on income support until after serving 2 years, 14 months of a 4-year sentence. The law gives a list of special reasons that allows claims to be backdated. My previous claim was closed as I was moving house. I forgot all about it as I moved house on that day, so everything got a bit messed up. I call every few days awaiting next appointment. Decision maker. There was no more work. There were subcontractors. I was ill on both days. I have been ill and in and out of hospital, but I'm well now. Stomach problems. Dialogue IS091 has terminated abnormally. Temp work only. The guy at payroll confirmed. JSA, also in jail. Temp work only. Date stencil faxed. Ready to be processed. Claims and Payments Regulations 1987. Only temp work. Son is in hospital as he has to have an operation. Still alive. I lived on my parents' child tax credit and child benefit money. To whom it may concern, I hereby write an honesty statement that I am due no holiday pay or pay in lieu of notice. I am due no money from any employer. Not enough work. Destruction date notification. Passported reason. Drug abuse. Nervous debility. Plus second last payslip. Unsure if customer is living at. Until I secure accommodation of my own. Domestic emergency. I have asthma and I was having difficulty breathing. Left as put in kitchen, which was aggravating my asthma. Mother and father. My mother managed to help me for a short while. I was at school and lived with my mother. Secretary of State's direction on severe hardship, Job Seekers Act 95. My mum is going to throw me out if I don't give her money towards my keep. Need to know when and what payment was for. Asthma, depression, stomach problems. I have no money and cannot get a crisis loan as I am at the £1,000 limit. There has been a miscommunication somewhere along the line. Final payment made. Only worked for one day, the lady confirmed. I was in hospital having an operation to correct acid reflux. I am fine now. I have a cold, flu type of illness. I reckon it should only last a few days. I need to buy safety boots for this job. I moved house to this address. I am due no money from them or anyone else.
It's interesting because the thing that makes me think of is the fact that, like, I guess I was saying this before, that these are actual people, but when you're interfacing, you know, when you're trying to deal and engage with a system, they immediately, all of their responses are going to be incredibly cold. So here's all these people who have got these legitimate problems with these little quirks, they've got stomach problems, they need to buy boots, and then they're just going to be responded with, "We're very sorry, sir."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can get money if you get a job sometimes to help you buy some clothes. It's not very much. Yeah. And it might not be, it might not be the right kind of stuff for your job or whatever. And they kind of keep these things quiet anyway. You know, they don't actually tell you these things. You have to ask about them.
And I mean, people will, you know, these letters, you didn't see the responses to them, did you, I guess?
No, there was sometimes there was writing from some of the advisors. Mm. They would write in their own notes for maybe someone else or something like that. So there was a few. There was writing from actual clients, and some writing from the actual staff, and then there was some more officially bits just here and there that I kind of used as well. So you don't really get you get some kind of responses, but it's not really an empathetic response. It's more like a message for someone else that client is still not answering their phone or, you know, that kind of thing. We need to make sure that client is at this address, you know, things like that.
As opposed to just engaging with what the person actually said and requested and needed help with to get their lives in order.
Yeah, that's right.
Nicky Melville, everybody. His exhibition runs until the 16th of November at Fora Centre Plus on Castle Terrace in Edinburgh. It's in the old Brutalist BSS building. Hopefully you'll recognize it when you pass it. It's really, really grey. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll be back with you next week with another fantastic episode. Until then, goodbye for now.